Let the trap!
Listening to What the Truck.
Are you ready to truck it? It's time for your Nooner with Dooner. Welcome to the show. Fog machine's already cranking because it's almost Halloween around here. We got a very special it's a lot of smoke. We got a very special, What the Truck Halloween coming up on Monday, if you can see me, if this smoke ever comes down, but it's close enough to the spooky season. I guess we had to try this thing out, and I know not to hit the A button, because that is just way too much. There's just way too much fog coming through here. I hope it doesn't get the smoke detectors. Welcome to the show, everybody. Is that going to... Christian, can you do me a favor and hit the button on that? Oh, wait, it stopped. It stopped. We're good now. We're good. I'll get Haley with it later. All right, we got a serious topic to get into before we get into stuff over here. Drivers in Maine, you need to be on the lookout. Take a look at this tweet that my buddy Wes Harmon put out there. Suspected spree killer Robert Card, he's out on the loose. He's killed at least 18 people. If you saw in the newsletter yesterday, I talked to drivers about the alerts that they're receiving on their QualmCons. Be vigilant. He's very dangerous. Wes Harmon got this one. He said, boy, you don't see this every day. I delivered at the Lewiston Walmart Distribution Center, site of one of the shootings earlier this month. Fortunately, it did come out. Initially, there were reports that there was a shooting at a Walmart Distribution Center. Fortunately, that did not happen. But drivers, this guy is still out there. They're still looking for him. And he might be looking for a way out of here. That's what he looks like. He's the suspected killer that is out there right now. Real quick report I want you all to look at. By the way, thoughts and prayers with all the victims. Real quick report I want you all to see here. Piracy is back on the menu. Piracy incidents are on the rise despite previous declines. Piracy surged in the first 9 months of 2023, especially in the Gulf of Guinea, Callao, and Singapore, according to the IMB. AIS data shows 2,749 vessels currently in the Gulf of Guinea with an average stay of 9 hours and 45 minutes. That's via marine traffic. On Monday, on a very What the Truck Halloween, when we have the Huntsman, Ross Kennedy, we have Sal Mercogliano, and we have John Conrad on here, that's going to be a great topic to jump in on with them. What else is going on here? There's also porch piracy, big issue. Here's a map from 2018. This is showing what has happened, and some has changed from them. Back then, 2018, the top five places for package theft were San Francisco, Seattle, Washington, Minneapolis, Boston, and Portland, Oregon. How about now, though? The Telegraph reports data collected by Vivint Smart Home, a home technology and security company, shows St. Louis is the number one city in the United States where your package is most likely to get stolen from your front porch. They use data from Google Trends. They looked at a ton of different places here. The top five ended up being St. Louis, Jersey City, New Jersey, Madison, Wisconsin, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and Fremont, California. United States was actually number fourth in the world for porch piracy. Iceland, number one. I would not have guessed that, would you? So be careful. Holidays are coming up. And there is on FreightWaves.com, after the show, go check it out. There's a new article up from Rachel Premack. Flexport, the San Francisco-based forwarder, they are out there, and they might be on the market to buy Convoy. The Wall Street Journal had a report out there. There's some sources. They're looking to get the tech stack. Some employees will be involved in this. Unfortunately, this hasn't been confirmed. I actually personally asked Ryan Peterson myself. He said, I can't give you any comment on that, unfortunately. What do you guys think, though? Leave in the comments. Do you think that Convoy Flexport would be a good marriage? You think they would fit? Give Flexport some inroads into domestic trucking. We'll be keeping an eye on it, and as soon as that changes, we'll give you more information. Anyways, on today's show, we have an awesome one. I'm joined by NASA Kennedy Space Center's Brian Berry. We're going to talk about the logistics of launching NASA's next commercial crew mission. We're going to find out how commercial crew works and everything that's going on up in space with that. We got Diablo Freight Ventures' Tyson Lawrence. He's talking about overcoming failure in freight. And hey, there's been a lot of failures lately. He had a company, went out of business. He's rebuilding now, building himself back up. He's going to share his lessons learned. I think they'll be invaluable to all of us. F3 is descending upon California in just 11 short days now. Haley Fazio is here with a preview of what's going down at the Future of Freight Festival in the Scenic City this November. Plus, we got truck stop buying habits, EV charging etiquette, motorcyclist walks away from getting run over by a semi, and much more. So let's tip the band, then we'll get on over to NASA. Looking for a new adventure? The next step on your career journey with AIT Worldwide Logistics. Take the next step with AIT Worldwide Logistics. When you join their growing team, you'll collaborate with expert colleagues around the world to create innovative solutions backed by world-class customer service. If you're ready to push the supply chain envelope, your next adventure is waiting. Visit the career section at AITworldwide.com to learn more and apply today. So NASA's Commercial Crew, it's being developed on a goal of safe and reliable, cost-effective human transportation to and from the International Space Station from the United States through a partnership with American private industry. Here's a quick video to sort of show you what it's all about.
Human spaceflight. Two words that, when combined, captivate our imagination and inspire us to explore worlds outside of our home planet.
We keep pushing the boundaries of what's possible because we're evolving. We're growing, we're learning. We, as a human race, have always done that, and we should continue to do that.
For more than a decade, NASA's groundbreaking Commercial Crew program has led the way toward a new era in human spaceflight, impacting the agency and industry in tremendous ways.
Thank you so much for what you've done for us today, putting America back into low Earth orbit from the Florida coast.
First, by partnering with innovative commercial partners to return a human launch capability to the United States and reestablish the nation as a leader in exploration.
We definitely really appreciate the hard work that you all had to go through to ensure that the contractors could understand NASA and what we needed to have human spaceflight be safe in the way that we wanted to operate it.
Then, building on that developmental success with reliable transportation services to the International Space Station that strengthened our international partnerships.
Very, very cool. This is an exciting topic. Brian Berry, it's my honor to have you here. He's a mission manager, commercial crew program, mission management, and integration officer at NASA. And I believe you're over at Kennedy Space Center today, are you not?
Yes. Hey, good afternoon. I am at Kennedy Space Center.
Well, hey, it's great to meet you. NASA, super exciting, aspirational job. Love it. What do you get into over there?
So, Kennedy Space Center, I'm a Commercial Crew Program mission manager. So basically what that means is for the next Commercial Crew launch, Crew 8, we launch in middle of February. It's my job to make sure that all of the certification work for that mission is complete before we give our final go for launch. So, for example, on November 8th, SpaceX is going to come, and that's 3 months before launch. They're going to tell us, here's all the changes we've made since Crew 7 to the Dragon capsule and to the Falcon 9 rocket. And NASA's going to work through those changes and make sure it still meets our standards before we give our go in February of 2024.
Wow, Brian, you have dedicated some time to NASA. I was reading your bio. You even met your wife at NASA. Do you think that soon enough we'll have weddings up in space? Do you think you think we'll be seeing nuptials set up there?
I think we will. Yeah, I don't see why not. I know I've seen some pretty cool personal stuff flown up from the astronauts when I was at Johnson Space Center. You know, we make a good connection with the astronauts. We train them at Johnson Space Center. So I have seen some really cool personal photos and mementos taken up to the space station. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a wedding soon.
Well, talk about a destination wedding. How about Commercial Crew? Commercial Crew is a big part of NASA now and why we're getting back up into space. Lay it out for us. What does Commercial Crew do? What's the point of it?
So the point of Commercial Crew is basically to enable the private industry to begin flying NASA astronauts initially to low Earth orbit, and then ultimately to use those vehicles and those operations that NASA has, you know, signed off on and said, this is safe, this is certified. And then they can go use those vehicles and operations to fly, private citizens to low Earth orbit. Right now, the ISS is kind of the main and the only destination, but, you know, soon there will be additional destinations where these vehicles can travel. And really, that's the point of CCP, is just to kind of set the benchmarks and the standards so that the private industry can grow and get out to low Earth orbit.
Now, when you say private citizens, is this sort of like the first step towards space tourism, or is it more towards building commerce and industry and letting business leaders? Who's going up on these missions?
So for now, Commercial Crew, it's NASA astronauts to the ISS. But, you know, SpaceX has already done some private astronaut missions. And these are private citizens. These are not NASA astronauts. They're doing both tourism, and there's also been some science and payload work that they've done in low Earth orbit. So it's going to be a combination of both tourism and additional research and science like we do on the ISS.
So help me understand, how do we get, like, why do we need commercial crew? How do we get to space before? Were missions funded different? I know you have these partnerships with SpaceX and Boeing, both making their respective capsules. Why is this necessary?
So before, you know, we had the shuttle program, and the purpose of the shuttle program was to get to low Earth orbit, to do research and science. And then the purpose of that vehicle kind of became to build the ISS. So without the shuttle, there's no International Space Station. So we did that. And as part of continuing our crew rotations at the ISS, the shuttle was really over-designed for that purpose of just transporting crew to and from the ISS. It was more of a truck, a workhorse to get heavy things up to orbit. And now the commercial crew program is more of, let's build a capsule to get three or four people up to the ISS and back every 6 months so that we can continue our presence and our research up at the ISS. So that's kind of the shift in purpose of the two vehicles. And then there's also been a shift in philosophy. So with the shuttle, that was entirely designed and owned by NASA. And that was our major focus while we had the shuttle. Now NASA's focus is more on deep space exploration with Artemis, back to the moon and beyond. And so what we can do with low Earth orbit, which we've been doing for, you know, 50 years, is we can work with the private sector to get, you know, capsules to and from low Earth orbit reliably and safely. So NASA can shift its focus to you know, deep space destinations.
Interesting. So how do you pick the partnerships on there? As we mentioned, there's SpaceX and there's also Boeing.
You know, we have calls for partners, and we review inputs from several different partners, and ultimately NASA reviews the details of those and selected SpaceX and Boeing initially for the commercial crew program. There could be additional partners that come online as we grow, but that's where we are today.
So how does the mission work? Like, you mentioned that you're preparing for your eighth mission, right? How do you prepare for other ones? How do they come together, at least from your perspective?
So the way the mission comes together, it's basically with SpaceX, at least, you know, we've done our seventh crew mission right now is on the ISS, docked to the ISS today. So when we launch in February, that will be the eighth mission. So at this point, it's really we begin from what we did previously. We look at the deltas, what's changing, what's improved, where do we need to go make better improvements since what we've seen from the previous missions. So all of these things happen from the time the capsule lands on the previous mission until we launch on the next one. We're just scrubbing everything, making it better. But really, the template kind of remains the same of what we've done since the Crew 1 mission, where we plan for a six-month rotation. We launch four astronauts and we bring four back home.
So who can, like you mentioned, so this involves not just, it involves private industry. So who can go on them? How do you end up on a commercial crew mission?
So the commercial crew missions right now are just NASA astronauts going to and from the ISS. As I mentioned, SpaceX does have private missions where they take, they've partnered with a company called Axiom, and they've taken Axiom selected astronauts up to the ISS, and they've done, usually it's a 10 to 15 day mission, and they do science experiments up there that are funded through Axiom and their contracts with SpaceX. So right now that's kind of the only other way to get to the ISS. But for like Crew 7, Crew 8, these CCP missions, these are NASA astronauts.
So I got a question for you then. What kind of cargo are you bringing up with these astronauts that you're sending up there? What's the freight? This is a supply chain show. What's in the capsule?
Yeah, so each capsule brings up a lot of supplies for not only the crew members on the capsule to eat, drink, their food, their consumables, things they need to use while they're traveling to the ISS, but we also bring up supplies for the crew members already on the ISS. We bring up additional science experiments. We have these large units we call lockers, and there's you know, some lockers that are freezers, and we bring up cold science, and we're going to go do those things on the ISS. So it varies every mission, but it could be science experiments, food, or just consumables and supplies that the ISS needs. The Dragon capsule that we use with SpaceX, there's also a cargo variant of that capsule where there's no crew members, there's no seats, and they can bring up, you know, a ton more cargo than we do on a CCP mission.
That is so interesting. You know, I'm looking at the video and it keeps showing that Dragon capsule, the SpaceX one. And I'm curious because if you think about it, I've gone to the space museums a bunch. I've sat inside the capsules and those were designed 50, 60 years ago. They're really small. They're very metal. They're obviously not very comfortable. And that looks like, you know, the inside of a Tesla or something. What's the design philosophy when you can rethink how a capsule's built?
Yeah, so the new capsules are very modern. You know, the purpose, as I mentioned, is just to get to and from the ISS. They're not really designed for long duration stays on orbit, you know, on their own. It is pretty spacious, but, you know, a matter of 3 or 4 days is usually about all folks want to spend in the capsule before they want to get to the ISS or come home. But yeah, they're definitely more modern. They've got, you know, interfaces that we never had on shuttle. There's touch screens and things like that. So it's definitely a big step forward going from shuttle to a Dragon capsule.
Yeah, because how long is the trip to the ISS? You mentioned a couple days, and it kind of looks, I mean, they're not very big, the capsule, so it kind of looks like what you see is what you get. So do you have to sit in that chair for that whole, like, duration of the trip?
No, once the crew reaches orbit, they can, you know, unbuckle and get out of the chair. But yeah, it is a pretty small volume. I believe the fastest we've gotten to the ISS is under 24 hours. So typically the crew sleep on the capsule once and then we'll dock the next day. So it's not too long to be in the capsule on orbit without the ISS. But yeah, they're always very excited to get to the ISS. And, you know, it's a very large vehicle, so they can, you know, stretch out a little more once they get to the ISS.
Now, during these missions, are you monitoring the whole thing? Like, obviously, like all NASA's, but are you as well? Like, what happens if something goes wrong? What could go wrong?
Yes. So there are teams that track the mission the entire 6 months it's docked at the ISS. So in Houston, the ISS flight control team is there 24/7. There's always a team on console in mission control. In Hawthorne, the SpaceX team, they are there not quite 24/7, but they come in every week. They turn the vehicle on while it's docked to the ISS, check all the systems, make sure everything's okay, and then they power it back down. So really, the Dragon capsule is pretty quiescent. It's not doing anything while it's docked, so there's not a whole lot to worry about. But there could be issues with the International Space Station that would drive our crew to need to leave. You know, there could be a fire, there could be a depress, there could be a toxic atmosphere that leaks into the ISS. So these are some of the emergencies we plan for. The crew would need to get into Dragon, quickly get their suits on, close the hatches, and they could undock and come home on relatively short order. But yeah, from my perspective in CCP, the majority of our work is getting to and from the ISS, but we do keep eyes on the vehicle throughout its entire stay at the ISS.
What's the long term? So you got Mission 8 coming up. That launches, did you say it was February, early next year it launches?
Yeah, that's right. February 15th, our target date.
What's the sort of the long term goal after that? So you do Mission 8, and where does this go? Where are we developing this to?
So right now with Commercial Crew, you know, like I mentioned, the larger goal is to enable private industry to begin flying to low Earth orbit. Within the scope of the International Space Station, the ISS right now is contracted out through 2030. So our goal in CCP is to provide that safe and reliable transportation to and from the ISS until the end of life for ISS. So we've got, you know, 7 more years there. And, you know, we've got Boeing coming online soon. They're going to be doing some testing later this year, and then they're going to do their crew test in April of next year. So once they're flying, you know, their certified missions, the goal will be to alternate a Boeing mission and then a SpaceX mission every 6 months and just continue that routine and get folks to and from the ISS so that they can continue their work through 2030.
Do the astronauts prefer one capsule over the other? Do they have a preference?
No, there's no preference. You know, right now we've got a crew that's focused on the Boeing CFT mission. They're training every day, getting to know the capsule, and they're ready to go. And then we train the crew on the SpaceX capsule when they're assigned to that mission. But, you know, we put both vehicles through the same standards and rigor in the CCP program. So, no, there's no preference from the crew members.
No. No, that looks really neat. Are you moving these? I'm looking at these on some trailers. How are you moving the actual capsules around?
Yes. Yeah, so the capsule, once it's built, it's for SpaceX at least, it's built out in Hawthorne, California initially. It's trucked over to Kennedy Space Center. Cape Canaveral Space Force Base is where they store all the capsules. And then once it's there, it will launch. It will land. The recovery ships will bring it back to the Space Force Base. They'll offload it, and they'll begin the refurb process to get it ready for another launch. So once a capsule is initially built, it will stay out here in Florida for all of its missions.
That's got to be some unique freight to haul. I'd like to be a driver pulling that stuff. Well, let me ask you a question. You said 7 years the ISS is done for, right? So what happens to the program after that? Where are you flying to?
Well, I'm not entirely sure on that one, but, you know, the ISS was initially funded, I think, through 2020, and then it was extended to 2024. Right now it's 2030. We could always do assessments and determine if we can extend that life a little more. And in that case, CCP would continue to work with ISS to get to and from the station.
Well, Brian, really cool. So the mission launch is in February. People want to watch it. They can watch it. I've watched them before. They're on NASA's YouTube channel. You guys do great live streams. It's almost Halloween, though, and I always ask NASA people what their favorite space movie is, but I'm going to put a modifier. What's your favorite space horror or horror sci-fi movie?
I don't know if it's my favorite, but I think the last one I saw was, I think it was called Apollo 18.
Oh, yeah.
Where they landed on the moon and there were, I guess, some zombies on the moon. That was pretty entertaining.
Man. I'd have to go with Alien as a classic, or District 9, another great one. Well, Brian, I thank you so much for your time. People want to learn more about what's going on with Commercial Crew. Where can I send them to?
NASA.gov, and then from there they can drill down and find information on the ISS or Commercial Crew Program, Artemis, anywhere they want to go.
Thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Take care. All right, everybody. Meanwhile, going down at Spirit Halloween. Hell, now that Toys R Us is gone, this is like my kid's favorite store. Because there's like, Target just has like a little toy section. Like Spirit Halloween is just full of animatronics. This guy's got like a Dark Crystal costume on. They're great. Do you need your computer for some reason? What? We'll just put it right here. But you gotta talk into that microphone, okay? Very important here. Talk loud, booming.
Okay.
Yeah, like the like your delivery guy's across the street.
Okay.
And he's late. Yeah, this guy says right here, Gregory Allen, he says, that's the same concept as the Landstriper Muppet from the Dark Crystal. To me, those kind of actually also look like the roller skate guys from, you ever see Return to Oz with Fairuza Balk?
No.
It's like a demented version of Wizard of Oz that came out
that
in the late 80s.
No, I don't want to see that.
Well, you need to see it. You're like Jack Ackie. He says, Halloween scares me. Things can go wrong. I wrote about accidents during Halloween the other day. That you?
No.
Haley, who are you? Tell the people.
I'm Haley Fazio.
You don't need your notes. Just talk to me.
You're fine. Freight Waves.
You're fine, Haley.
I know I'm fine.
You're good.
Events. I do events. I do the Freight Waves events. Well, there's a team of us that does the events, but sponsorship, sales, operations, everything. Whole thing.
We got a pretty awesome. What's on? What's behind me? We got, they're working on, they got a new background here.
What is
kind
that?
Of, is that, where is that?
Oh.
Can you pick
that
location?
Well, that's not our event, but maybe one day.
Oh, Haley took that picture. Well, F3's coming up. Speaking of scenic scenes like that one behind us, the scenic city, Freight Waves converging on it, all the best leaders in this space, all the disruptors in this space, all the influencers, everybody's coming down to the Chattanooga Convention Center, actually where my son just was, because he had a picture in Comic-Con, so he was just honored. I was there last week scoping it out, making sure, you know, they were keeping the place nice for us.
Oh, yeah.
And it looked great. You can still get tickets, live.freightwaves.com.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or message Dooner, message me.
Use my code, F3WTT. Yeah. I think it's one of the best tickets.
Discount codes, yeah. We've got some good discounts.
Let's start with the fun stuff. Who is performing at night? Who is keeping us rocking?
Well, I mean, you guys know, I have said it, and I'll say it again, T.I. I'm very excited about T.I. Soap Creek is doing the after party for us with T.I. We've got David Nail. And who else do we have?
We got Electric Avenue.
Electric Avenue. Kenny Wade Shepherd Band at the J.B. Hunt Party. And then Mind Dub.
DJ
little electronic with Lean Solutions. I feel like they always bring the electronic vibes for the after parties. So a lot of fun experiences. We also have a puppy palace. A puppy palace inside the convention center. Some painting, live painting going on inside the convention center. A lot of fun activations inside the convention center and outside. Emerge is doing a nice little putt-putt golf simulator. Ooh, there's the puppies. Well, some of the puppies. There's going to be a lot more. But look how cute those guys
are. You know, I might have puppies soon. My wife was walking Randy Savage the other day, and another lady was walking her girl lab, and she was like, do you want to breed? Do you want to breed the dog?
Yeah, do it.
We're considering.
Look at those guys. Someone's going to take home a puppy, for sure.
So why should people come down here? Why should they come to F3? What makes this event?
F3 is like Christmas, I think, for the freight industry, because it's a fun event. It's a festival, right? It's like, we're not in the convention center all day. We're not stuck watching demos or keynotes or, you know, which that's great, but we get out, we get to network, we get to connect with each other, we get to have great food, great weather. I think this, like, in the 70s right now in Chattanooga, it's perfect weather. You know, just to connect and get out and about. And, you know, obviously, like, there's a lot going on in the industry right now, like there always is. But right now, I feel like it's a time that we all need to kind of come together and, you know, learn the new technologies, but also figure out what the heck we're doing in 2024.
No, there's no better time to meet and talk. You know, I host this show 3 days a week. My head is deep down in freight all the time. And I remember after Yellow went out of business, it was just kind of like the summer was a slog after that. There wasn't a lot of news, and it was just bad news and market going down. And then, it's been rapid fire ever since. You have news of Flexport. You got news of Convoy. You got news of Convoy and Flexport. Flexport potentially buying Convoy's tech stack. You have wars going on. I mean, so many black swans are in the pond right now that there's a ton to talk of, and we're going to get to the agenda. But before I do, part of what makes this what it is we take over the scenic city, and there's a lot of networking opportunities, and some of those are the experiences. What are the experiences this year?
Yeah, so we go in the convention center from about 7 to 3. You know, that's where you see your rapid fire demos, you see your keynotes, you see Dooner's show, the FreightWaves TV shows. But after that, we go into the pavilion, and that's really the time when we're all together listening to music, the different artists that we just showed up there. And then afterwards, we have the after parties, the JB Hunt party, and then the after parties after that is all kind of the chance to connect. There are some invite only experiences at Chattanooga Whiskey, Southside Social. Triumph Pay is doing a fun barbecue. Those are invite only, but there are a lot of experiences that are open, like I said, like the Puppy Palace inside the convention center to connect. Amazon is doing an awesome event at the aquarium. So we have the entire aquarium to ourselves with food and drink on every level. We get to connect, hang out with the fish, the sharks. River and ocean will be open. So it's a really cool experience to go by and see that.
Now, before I get into the schedule, do you have a favorite? When was your first FreightWaves event?
Oh gosh, mine was Chicago.
That was mine too.
Mine was Chicago when we had to drive.
Yes. Well, I was going to ask you, what is the most memorable one for you so far?
Well, I would definitely say that one, because I think it was my second week on the job, and we drove in a snowstorm up to the event in Chicago. But it's different working the events now. You know, you get to see the behind the scenes and how much effort and energy goes into these things. It's really unbelievable. So it takes a group effort for sure.
No, I'd agree. In November of 2019, especially then, this was before the pandemic, so... Now, back then, I think it was like 95% of FreightWaves worked here. They were in Chattanooga. They weren't even have like remote workers back then, except for some like temps. And we all, like, I don't know if you guys know this, but we run our own conferences. So our team works the conference. They run everything in the background. If you're not doing stage work, you're out, you know, helping out at the desk. You're help at registration. You're helping people figure out where to go, how to get on buses and trolleys and stuff like that. Well, we all get to the Chattanooga airport, and we're all flying around in summertime. All the flights get canceled. Craig, myself, Emily, we were supposed to open the show the next morning. We immediately were like, we got to get vans. And I think we got like about a half hour before our former CFO, not Spencer. This was not a Spencer there, former CFO. He was driving the van and I was in the van with Craig, and he like almost hit something. And Craig's like, I can't do this. And he's like on the phone. He's calling someone up, and he secured us a private flight out there, but it almost felt like being like the Big Bop or something. It's like, well, okay, we got to fly in the blizzard?
Yeah.
This little plane? And like private jets. When you see them in movies, they're like super baller style.
Where no, you're like crammed like, in there.
Yes, you're crammed in there. They're like, make sure you go to the bathroom because it's just like a little hole in the side. But we got in. It was fine. And it was an amazing time. I was amazed at how many people showed up. This obviously a lot more convenient for us down here in Chattanooga. Last year's was amazing. I think so many people were taken aback about how we were able to transform what goes on in Freight Alley and bring people a unique experience that doesn't just keep you locked inside of an exhibit hall or locked inside of just a bunch of people talking.
Yeah.
Because you're going to get that info, but you also need to break and have some breathing room and be able to talk about these issues.
Yeah, you get the best of both worlds. You get the great action-packed content. And honestly, the keynote lineup that we have this year and the demos, we have over 40 demos. Mm. like four different keynotes and a ton of fireside chats. Like, we're just stacked with talent with this event. It's huge. And also, the other thing is the app. Download the app. It makes things a lot easier to kind of navigate when you're at the event to see who's going on where. You can create your own custom schedule. You can network with people. So that's always something I like to shout out. Download the FreightWaves app from the App Store and get on there.
Everything is awesome that's going to happen at the event, but I marked out some of the sessions that I'm definitely going to try and fit into my schedule with this one. The first one is obviously an industry keynote with J.B. Hunt and BNSF. They're going to get into the troubles going on in intermodal. I just saw a stat that intermodal volume was some of the highest that it's been. It may be the highest it's been, but what's interesting in that numbers was a lot of it was repositioning of empties. So it's like, wow, that's really good, but does that tell the whole story? So I want to know if that's the whole story from what's going on with J.B. Hunt, because if you've seen earnings, a lot of these companies, they're struggling like everybody else in the freight recession, some doing better than others. And J.B. Hunt, BNSF, they've been making some moves, so it'll be really interesting to see the insight that guys like Spencer Frazier, Darren Field, and Thomas Williams are going to bring.
Yeah, I think so too. I think there's going to be, like I said, a lot of action-packed fireside chats. I'm excited to hear from my good friend Sabrina Carr from Clorox. I think that'll be interesting after coming out of COVID and just hearing the thought leadership from her and the Clorox company.
How do you contend with how do you responsibly manage, because we didn't always do this in freight with capacity, how do you responsibly manage such a flow of Clorox wipes being sold? You're selling so many more than you did before. How do you get out of that at the right time without too much inventory?
I don't know. That's
an interesting equation.
I mean, she's got her hands full, so I commend her.
There's going to be a great fireside chat tackling unique supply chain and logistics challenges. I'm an ex-FedExer, so very excited to hear from Ramona Hood from FedEx Custom Critical. She'll be talking to the great one, Mr. Craig Fuller.
Yep. I'm excited. I think Alan Gershenhorn, too. I think that'll be a good one. Former UPS chief commercial officer. Great guy. Full of information, very, very smart. I think that'll be good also with Craig. So,
my first What the Truck of the Day. I don't have to wait that long. It's at 11 a.m. on day one. I have some awesome guests. I've got Matt Zimmer from Zengistics. I've got Chad Eichelberg from Reliance Partners. I've got Ronald Ramsey from Reliance Partners as well. I got Justin Bailey from Rose Rocket. And I've got Andrew Culhane from Torque. A lot of interesting stuff going on in AV with changes to regulations. Actually, did you hear Cruise? They have suspended all fleets. They initially California, they pulled the card on them because of a pedestrian incident. Didn't even seem like it was fully their fault. Someone got hit by a car crossing the street, a pedestrian. They got knocked in front of the autonomous vehicle. The autonomous vehicle ended up dragging the pedestrian.
Oh.
But one incident like that can shut down an entire AV fleet. Wow. So I'm really curious about how this has AV leaders thinking about things. Because Cruise, they said not just California. They just started in Atlanta, too. They said we're pulling our fleet everywhere to do more studies into the technology to make sure another incident doesn't happen, which I think makes everyone more comfortable, but it also shows how many pedestrians do you think get hit a day by regular cars?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I haven't thought about that before.
Well, it's such a tough one accident, but they don't here's the thing, when I think about it, though, is if you think about one driver, if a driver hits somebody, they're held accountable. They can be taken to jail. That car's off the road. If an AV does it, well, every AV is that driver, right?
Yeah.
If one crew said that every, and then that maybe is a different psychological thing. The Torque has a much different problem to solve, but I'm curious how trucking's thinking about it.
Yeah. No, you know what? Would be interesting is to see an automated legal team. Imagine the legal team that automated.
I'm sure we're going to hear a lot about AI there. That's the new flavor of the month. A lot of companies are putting efforts into there, especially after ChatGPT brought that to the forefront.
So much.
So I'm sure there'll be a lot of solutions. Another interesting one is Fireside Chat. Is your freight secure? A lot of talk about cargo theft. I actually started the show talking about piracy. I talked about on the water, and I talked about porch pirate theft. But whenever Travelers is on here, we're talking about the theft within the trailers. At this event, it's going to be Richie Daigle, Anthony Smith, and Michael Caney. The highway. They're going to be talking about this issue that all these leaders are trying to solve, and I'm really happy to see more attention is being brought to double brokering fraud as well as theft of goods from trucks.
I spoke to Richie before they signed up for that chat, and it is absolutely crazy how he's dealing with it firsthand 100% on the line talking to these people, dealing with the situation. So I think it's an interesting topic to learn about, you know. So I'm interested.
No, we because you're getting a double dose too, because Peter Rentschler and Craig Fuller are also going on specifically on the winners and losers in digital load boards. There's been some, and they're also talking about fraud that goes on there and how companies are tackling it. I think it's one of the – I mean, you're on the side. You see all the requested topics, but I know with this show it's one of the top requested ones, so I'm certain it had to be at F3.
Absolutely. That's, you know, it's interesting to see all the different range of topics that we get submitted, but there's just so many controversial topics, I feel like, right now that's happening with the industry and the economy. I feel like you got to be at this event to hear what's going on, and it's right before the holidays too, so it's a nice little break before you head out and enjoy the holidays with the fam.
Now, speaking of JB Hunt 360, they throw on our biggest party at our events always. Yeah. They do an amazing job. They get everybody moving. This year, they have Kenny Wayne Shepherd. That kicks off at 6:30. And then there's an after party with DJ MyNub and T.I. Where is this taking place?
So the first night, it is the pavilion. So we'll have the JB Hunt party and then the after party with Soap Creek with T.I. And then the second night, we have pavilion at JB Hunt party. And then there is, not Station Street. What is it called? The West Village. We had Station Street last year. West Village is where the after party will be the second night. So it's a cobblestone street with restaurants all around. It's a really, really cool piece of Chattanooga right in the center of the city. So that'll be a lot of fun.
You know, a big topic that came up, this is starting on day two at 7:50 in the morning. Our things that we go out late and
we get up early.
Drink a lot of water when you're at
and
these
coffee.
Things. And if we're a little cranky, that's why. No, it's a good time. And there's so much energy through it. We can all crash on Friday when it's over. We're going to be running strong during this. But a big issue, Haley, like this came up so much in 2021 when employees had a lot of power. Like every company was hiring, right?
Yep.
So especially in brokerage, a lot of brokers wanted to jump jobs, but a lot of them were handcuffed with non-competes. So it was a big issue. I remember Steam had a big push against it. Now we fast forward 2 years, and the issue is not so much that. It's that a lot of these brokers are losing their jobs, but they're stuck under these non-competes. I've gotten fired with having a non-compete before. It absolutely sucks. Jason Prevention from Steam, Rachel Premack are talking about ending non-competes in logistics. Is it time?
I think it's huge. I mean, I was under a non-compete for a while. I worked in brokerage, and it's not fun. It's uncomfortable. So, you know, Steam's done a really good job of pushing that, and I'm excited to watch them continue to do so.
How about this keynote on day two? What happens in China doesn't stay in China. What the Chinese economy tells us about supply chain stability in 2024. That's with the great Leland Miller. He's the CEO over at China Beigebook. And, of course, our own founder and CEO, Craig Fuller.
Yeah.
He lives for those kind of talks.
Oh, 100%. That's right up Craig's alley. That'll be good. It's all good. I can't pick a favorite.
Well, you know, I mean, this particular talk became even more urgent with what's happening in Gaza and Israel and Taiwan and the moves that China is making. And because we moved to warship, they were upset. So it's really curious how it's going to be affected. And everyone goes, well, you got to get rid of China. But those of us who work in supply chain or who look at the tags on our shirts or realize where our computers are made and all this stuff on the desk is made, realize like that's not easier said than done.
Yeah.
And what does a war mean? Like that would completely wreck our supply chain.
100%. I mean, I feel like we're just now recovering. If we've recovered from COVID, and now we have this on our doorstep, so it's.
And if there weren't enough spinning plates, the other one that always comes up is energy. There's so many regulations coming towards fleets, right? What are they going to do with CARB? What are they going to do next year at the ports? What are they doing in 2030? What are the shippers doing to get their net zero goals filled? Well, there's another keynote, why economic growth will require investments in energy, including fossil fuels, narrative disruption. Alex Epstein, he's the author of Fossil Future. And he's also the president of the Center for Industrial Progress. He's going to be having a great conversation with Craig Fuller as well.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear that. Honestly, I'm not really well-versed in those topics. I need to sit down and listen to that one. I think that'll be great, too.
Now, my first FreightWaves event was in Atlanta. It was the one before Chicago. It was FreightWaves Live, and the person who opened up that show was it was day two. The one who opened up on the first one was Gary V.
Yes, Gary Vee
opened up. That was great. I got a little trouble with my cab on that one. But on day two, Brad Jacobs opened it up, and he came out, and he had, like, papers in his hand. He threw them on the ground. He said, this entire thing is an open Q&A, and he just took questions from the audience. And he's doing one, How to Make a Few Billion, a town hall with Brad Jacobs, super leader. I can't wait to hear what he's learned. I can't wait to hear what you guys learned. I can't wait to hear what has changed in how he's talking from when I originally heard him in 2019, because so much, we're in a completely different world.
Yeah, 100%. I'm excited to learn how to make a couple billion.
I would like to
learn couple billion?
A billion without winning the lottery.
I'm there. I'm sitting down and I'm listening to that one.
Of course, we got another What the Truck. It's at 1:30 on day two. I've got Dan Curtis from Triumph Pay on there. I've got Soap Creeps, Joe Patizzi, and I've got Michael Belker from Indiva. And also, I also have some surprise guests in store. Steve might be even be bringing their gong. It's going to be a lot of fun. You definitely don't want to miss day two. And that's what you mentioned. That night, what happens is we go over to the Tennessee Aquarium. What happens at the aquarium?
So the aquarium's fun. So we have a river aquarium and an ocean aquarium that are, you know, obviously two separate aquariums. Multi-level floor. We can walk through. There's food. There's drink. Honestly, the food was really good last year. So you have plenty of opportunities to network in kind of a unique place, right? So it's not that stuffy networking experience. It's fish and sharks and lights and music and people, and everybody's just in a good mood. The vibes are right, and it's awesome.
And then on the final day, you're going to show up, and this is a can't misser. This is what's it called? Success in business, particularly in freight, is dependable on negotiation. This is with Never Split the Difference author Chris Voss. He's going to be talking again to Craig Fuller, like all these keynotes. And in a time now where everyone's fighting for margin, you know,
you've got to negotiate.
You've got to negotiate
well
to secure that. I ran into Freight Vana right before last year's Freight Tech 25 awards were handed out. Let's see what they had to say.
Oh, boy.
We're ready?
Yeah. We're here with Lars and Don over at Freight Vana. Where do you guys think you're going to place in the Freight Tech 25?
You want to go first or me?
Go ahead.
It's somewhere between 1 and 26.
Well, all right.
Yeah. I love this, guys.
This is the big thing. People are very nervous before this event goes on. People are very excited to see where they'll place in the Freight Tech 25.
Yeah. Big deal.
This year, should we be excited about it? There's been some change in the landscape. Some of the companies that have been previously in the Freight Tech 100 haven't made it through this death by overfunding, this crisis that's going on, and some are just changing hands.
Yeah, I mean, it's extremely competitive right now. It's, for multiple reasons, but everybody always looks forward to this big announcement of the Freight Tech 25. I think it's, you know, we do it live on stage and everybody comes and tunes in, and it's always fun to see where people land.
And I can't wait for this one. This is a round table where we're talking about what I learned building What the Truck and helping build our podcast and TV network here. Craig's talking about what he learned building Freight Waves. And I don't know if you've seen recently, he's acquired a ton of different magazines in boating and
awesome
in
stuff.
Flying. He's even got very niche stuff. Like, I don't know, I think one of them was like Pontooning Magazine.
Yeah.
And a guy who just crushes on YouTube, Alex Mai, Mother Trucker News. Three of us are going to get together on stage and tell you our best-kept secrets about how we've been able to grow our respective brands. Don't miss that session.
It's huge. I remember when we were downstairs in the podcast booth. What the Truck. It has. It's grown so much.
Well, Haley, where do they go to get tickets?
All right. Well, there's multiple places. You can message Dooner, message me, or you can go to live.freightwaves.com, click events. They're at $800 off right now, tickets, so you can get them there. You can also get your Atlanta tickets for next year as well there. So the entire schedule.
Them.
Yeah, you can bundle them.
Use my code, F3WTT.
Yep, do it.
Haley, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
I'll see you in Chattanooga.
Woo, we're excited.
I mean, I'll see you before then.
Well, yeah, we'll see you in the office.
Awkward to get rid of you without
see
saying
ya.
Something.
Bye.
Take it easy. All right, did you know AIT Worldwide Logistics has been recognized as a top performer by Cranes, Forbes, Impound Logistics, Transport Topics, and yes, even FreightWaves? They're on our Freight Tech 100 list. Hey, we were just talking about that. Boost your job satisfaction, regain a sense of purpose, and open your career opportunities with one of the fastest-growing organizations in the industry. Visit the career section at AITWorldwide.com to learn more, and go ahead and apply today. All right, elsewhere.
Oh, my God!
I want my leather face to get one of these UPS guys. Chuck Love says, almost spit my coffee, Dooner, LOL. Dan Borglet says, what's scary is how he placed the package for easy view from the street and porch pirates. Now that's scary. Yeah, of course, you saw the date at the beginning of the show. And Marshall Bigelow said, it only does that when packages are tossed on a porches. We'd only hope. I would love a device like that. All right, let's talk to Tyson Lawrence. He's the CEO over at Diablo Freight Ventures. Hello, Tyson.
Dooner, what's happening, my man?
What's up, man? Where are you coming into me from? Where are you sitting today?
Oh, I'm actually in Brentwood, California, Northern California, out in the Bay Area.
Nice. Now, have you been to the Bay recently? Is it as bad as like Twitter and social media tells me?
Yeah, I mean, it's getting better. It is okay. Getting better. I don't want to, I'm a positive dude. So I love San Francisco and, you know, it's had its challenges, but it's getting better. And, you know, we're out in the Bay or out in the, you know, Outer Bay and East Bay. So we just go in and get our stuff and get out when we need to.
Hey, a little cowbell and a little gong for my two sons. They just finished their Little League season. And I was looking at your background, and I do want to talk about Diablo, but I saw that you also are invested in a bat company.
Yeah. Devo Bats. We make wood bats. And actually, we've started at the lower levels. You know, a lot of these kids are starting to swing wood bats. They've really neutered the aluminum bats that you and I grew up with. And so it actually, you know, smart if these kids want to play at the next level. And they have a lot of, you know, wood bat tournaments and things like that. And we'll be in the major leagues probably in the next 2 years. But right now, we've got guys swinging them in the minors and a lot of kids swinging them.
What's an interesting wood bat fact?
Let's see here. They start out square.
They start out square, and then you got to shape them and lacquer them?
Yeah, no, there's a real process that goes into them, and it's a real – I've learned a whole lot about it. You know, I'm a baseball fan, and the actual owner of the company is Jordan DeVore. He started it, played Major League Baseball, and then, you know, wanted to do his own thing. So I've been kind of helping with some of the advisory roles and shipping and logistics and things like that as it's grown.
Now, let's go back in time, because when you reached out to me, you're like, I have an interesting story to tell you, Dooner, and it's about failure and redemption. Let's start at the failure. Let's go back in time. What happened? You started a company that didn't work out?
Yeah, so I started my first freight brokerage in 2006. We focused on fresh produce, anything refrigerated, anything tough. Basically, we wanted to, you know, haul it. I was young, dumb, and I wanted to get in there. So anyway, you know, I just learned a lot. For 10 years, we grew that company. And about 10 years in, I thought we were indestructible. And we ended up getting caught up in financial obligations and things with a dispute with one of our biggest clients. And it ended up taking the company down.
Wow. So how did that impact you? Like, what did you learn from that? What was it like being in that moment?
Oh, it was incredible. In fact, I've kind of been, you know, empathizing with Dan Lewis and some of these guys that were at Convoy right now. I mean, at the end of the day, the numbers are relative, but, you know, it's everybody goes through the same thing as an entrepreneur. And at that time, you know, it felt very lonely. You know, it was tough. It was a lot of pressure. You know, I had a lot of employees. You know, I can't imagine what Dan's feeling. But I can't imagine kind of some of the same things of going through it, and something that you've built, you've got a lot of love and blood and sweat put into it to kind of come up and catch you when you think you're kind of past that point of, you know, being brought down.
No, you know, I hear you, and you know, I've built stuff. I'm building this, and I understand that there's a lot of slings and arrows that come at you. And I got to agree with you. I was a little disappointed in some of the commentary that people had towards Dan. I mean, some was very fair, but some was just completely mean-spirited. We're all in a very tough environment right now, and you know, I can see the empathetic side to it. I understand a lot of employees are in a tough situation, but sure. it's a brutal market, and I think you can also see both sides and have empathy towards both sides.
Oh, 100%. I mean, that was the hardest thing in my life, was, you know, having to lay off my crew and tell them basically, you know, the company's going down, and you know, this is how I feel like we can survive for another few days. And then, you know, actually having those last conversations, you know, are tough. And, you know, it becomes, you know, being a family is, you know, kind of overused in business, but I really, you become, the camaraderie is what I love about building companies. And you kind of, you have that as you grow. And then when you kind of hit a brick wall, it's traumatic, you know, and it took me a long time to get over it. I started another company in the ashes of it, and it was successful. A lot from learning in the past, but at the time, man, it was just, and there's not a lot of people around you that can empathize, you know. I found some people that could, but especially, you know, people that have never built a company before or aren't entrepreneurs, you know, they don't understand, you know, that feeling of, you know, responsibility that you have for your crew.
When did you, like, how did you know when to pivot and how did you go about that?
So, you know, it was being real honest with myself, to be honest. You know, I was just, you know, looking at everything and I was fighting. And, you know, we were kind of going, it was the 2015 freight recession. You know, it wasn't as much, it was really, I'm going to go back a little bit. You know, when, you know, Craig Fuller made a good point that in 2010, it was still a cottage industry. You know, I got into this in 2000 and I worked for C.H. Robinson, started my own at 2006. It was still real cottage industry. And so when, you know, 2015 came on, that recession hit, there weren't a lot of, you know, places to kind of, you know, figure this out with. And I had to be real honest and be like, okay, do I see this moving forward or is it better to cut, you know, keep fighting this? I mean, we were in a legal dispute and we were in a legal dispute with somebody much bigger than us. So I kind of had to forecast, you know, how much this was going to set us back or if it was better just to kind of like wave the white flag and do what we needed to do and move on. And coming to those decisions, I leaned on everybody. I remember vividly the first conversation I brought up. I had an investor that was in over about $1 million with me or $500,000 with me. And then I had, you know, an attorney and things like that. And I brought those guys all around a table and I just laid out three scenarios. One was where we go down completely. Two, we put more money in and keep going and keep fighting. Or three, we just, you know, live to fight another day and, you know, start something else at the back end after the, you know, we learn what we need to learn from this.
Yeah. What did you learn? Like, what is the best environment to build a freight brokerage in?
This one.
Why? Is everyone scared?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, when the tide recedes, you get to see who's swimming naked. Yeah. And, you know, I think a lot of people, including these freight brokerage companies or these digital freight brokerage companies, they rode the wave. They look like they were changing things from their technology when in reality it was just the market. So the market fell and they were swimming without trunks, you know, and it showed. And, you know, I think now it's such a ground level aspect that if you can survive in this market and you can build in this market, you're going to build in a great market. I don't believe in getting in at the top because you only got to go down. So even while it's tough, this business is tough. You know, and I think a lot of people are finding that out and you just got to, you know, bite your teeth and grind through it, especially when you're starting. And why not start in one of the toughest markets?
So then how do you, like, for example, I was just looking at like Heartland's earnings, for example. Heartland usually has a really nice operating ratio in the 80s. And I think that, don't quote me on this, I'm going to put an asterisk. I think it's close to 100%, if not over 100% on their latest report. How do you keep your running costs down in an environment like this where everything's expensive? Fuel, actually used trucks aren't that expensive anymore. You got that going for you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, trucking definitely, but even in the, you know, freight brokerage world, it's just being really, you know, trimmed down, looking at your finances and seeing what you need, what you don't need. Unfortunately, you're going to have to probably trim labor and, you know, that payroll, that type of stuff. But being organized is the biggest thing. I think, you know, I do some consulting and I work with, you know, freight brokers and other, you know, trucking companies and stuff. And one of the things that I find is that a lot of people aren't organized in their finances, you know, and creating some real important KPIs and, you know, metrics around what you need to stay afloat and then sticking to those and then keeping everything in line is really important, especially right now.
Gongs at freight brokerages. Are they an economic accelerator? Are you pro or anti-gong?
Man, I was hoping you would ask me this question. I was going to have to bring it up if you didn't. But we actually have a gong in our office, so we're pro gong.
I love it. Well, what is Diablo Freight? Let's go there. Like, so you started this new company, or you're trying to tell your new hero story. You're trying to rebuild. What are you rebuilding as?
Right. So, Diablo Freight Ventures is kind of a culmination of my 25 years in the business. You know, we have three different aspects. One of the things I learned about this business is you got to be diversified. You know, you got to kind of know all types of modes. You got to have different customers, you know, different carriers, things like that. So I've kind of taken that approach. And that's one thing I learned in my failure was we weren't diversified enough in our customer base. So I've got three different revenue streams inside this company. One, we own and operate a Unishippers franchise. Unishippers works with small package and parcels. We have a great agreement with UPS that allows us to work in their small to medium sized sector of businesses. And then the other aspect of Diablo Freight Ventures is consulting. I consult with freight brokerages, people that are, you know, in different stages of growing their freight brokerage. I work with, company shippers, investors, technology companies that kind of want to know the space a little bit more. And then the third aspect of the business is I invest in other startups, you know, early seed ventures as far as freight tech and things like that.
What do you like out there? So you put your investor cap on for a second. You know, there's been so much talk about investors bailing out on things out in this field. Let's have a more positive spin. What looks good right now? You don't have to name companies, but like, is there a type of tech or direction someone's going that you think is great and investable in this market?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, I think there's a lot of opportunity in, you know, markets like this, especially for investors. You know, you got to look hard at them. And one of the things about, you know, freight tech is, and the failure of Convoy and some of these others is that the good stuff's going to stick around. Some of the other stuff that was kind of fluff, it's going to kind of fall to the wayside. So that's kind of a resetting of everything right now in that aspect. But one of the things I really do like is the carrier verification, broker verification models or tech that's getting out there. I know there's a few companies out there. I have my favorites, but you know, I think that is important. The freight brokers need to build their tech stack more than ever, you know, to compete with these bigger ones and things like that. They've got to, you know, the bigger brokerages, they've got to find their own tech stack, you know, whether that's sonar or, you know, some other freight data gathering mechanism, TMS, you know, all that stuff. You've got to have a good freight stack. And I think one of those things you put in there now is some way to verify your brokers and your carriers.
You know, AI, it sounds a little bubbly at the moment, but I'm sure there's going to be some winners that come out of it and some progress that comes out of it. Is there anything in the AI space that you like, AI supply chain space?
You know, I think it's huge just because there's so much data involved in it. And, you know, it's kind of hard to see what's going to bubble to the top right now. But I just like the fact that it's in there. You know, I started in the freight brokerage game when it was cool if a driver had a cell phone. I mean, literally, like, we had to wait for them to call from a payphone to tell us where they were at. So I've seen the evolution now to where we're at and, you know, kind of the hype. And then now things bubbling down. And I think we're going to really see AI kind of solve a lot of the data analytics and kind of the data massive, amounts of stuff that we have to look through. It's going to really sort that out for us. I don't know how yet. And I don't know who's doing it. You know, I just can envision it from what I've seen already.
Yeah, well, I think at our own event, F3, I'll get a better idea. I'm sure some of those companies will be there. People will be talking about their... Actually, I know I'm interviewing at least one of them on What the Truck, so it'll be exciting to find out what's going on there. Hey, it is Friday, so it's time for a little good news, bad news. Stick around. We got a couple of videos to talk about over here.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
This is the best part of Friday.
The bad news and good news.
Boom, boom. Hope they're okay. All right, take a look at this video. I almost didn't post this. I had this video 2 days ago. I thought for sure this guy died. There's no way this person's not dead. You saw him just hit the back of that pickup truck, and now he gets run over by a semi truck. There's a guy on a motorcycle. He's going 140 miles an hour. He crashes into the car. His name is Street Demon PC. But I have good news to report. The New York Post says that he survived this. He only fractured a little more than 20 bones. And now he says, putting my life on the line, being as reckless as I was, wasn't even the issue. I put random innocent lives on the line. I was being risky as usual and got too close to the truck, and he closed the distance between us. I panicked, and it was too late.
Wow. Wow. That's news to me. I thought he was dead.
I thought for sure that guy was... I was like, man, why do people keep playing this video? But now that I know that he lived, that's amazing. Idiot. At least he admits that, like, you know, the real issue wasn't even just that I almost killed myself. I could have damaged someone else on the road.
Well, it was kind of a metaphor for my story, too, of my first freight brokerage, you know, to be honest with you. But
you were the biker. Well,
hey, yeah, yeah. I think this is good news. I like resilient people. The fact that he, you know, survived that, I mean, that's, he took his hit and he's getting back up. A lot of guys in the NFL can't do that. So personally, I think that's good news. And that he survived, that's even better news.
Absolutely. Let's give this guy a little cowbell. Hopefully he learned his lesson. I'll change my tune. Hopefully the judge does. I don't know why they won't name the guy. I mean, he was kind of driving like an idiot, but I guess they don't want to. Now, do you have like a Tesla? Do you have an EV?
I don't, but I live in the Bay Area, so it's like slug bugs.
You ever see people get into fights over who can charge and when they can charge and charger availability?
Actually, you know, I've seen some it's funny you brought that up because I thought that was a uniquely California thing. But yes, we did have I've seen some animated discussions around the EV stations.
All right. Well,
it was more of a parking spot, but, I guess it's.
Well, apparently it's everywhere. It's even over the pond. Take a look at this video right here that was posted up by Nick Lasnilos.
Oh, what are you doing?
What am I doing? Are you talking to me?
Yeah, what are you doing?
I'm just charging my car.
Yeah, but that's my charger. I might drive.
Oh, my God.
Right, okay. But I'm just charging my car because, I haven't got a charger over at my friend's house. I've just come to see my friend, and I thought you wouldn't mind.
Okay, but this is my drive and this is my charger as well.
Yeah, but they don't have a charger, you see. And my car needs charging and I'm going to be here a few hours and I thought, well...
Okay, I'm not at home and you're using my charger.
But that's even better. If you're not at home, that means that you're not going to have your car here.
Logic.
I'm saying that's my charger though.
About it.
No, I'm not getting big-headed, but I'm just saying, why are you using the charger?
I just explained. Clear out your ears, please. I just explained.
All right, this goes on. These guys are too polite, these British people, because, if this was in the U.S., there might be violence at this point.
Absolutely. You know, that wasn't definitely the California discussion I saw, but, so I'm struggling on good news, bad news on this one because I like her objections, overcoming objections.
She did a really good job there. She was like, the fight, he's like, I have to pay for the electricity. She's like, come on, it's like pennies. And she's like gaslighting the hell out of him and somehow making him feel petty because she's using his charger.
Totally. Yeah. She was not having, she was going to keep going. And she was only going to be there for a couple of hours too, by the way.
I would have been like, the problem is she said she was going to come back. Now, some people say this video may have been staged. If it was, that British acting was great, but I can imagine these same conversations would be happening.
Well, I guess just having it in your front yard, though, that's a little different. You know, most people have them inside their garages here and, we do have them at Best Buy and, whatever, they're out in the parking lots and things like that. So that's where I see most people trying to either wait for them, or getting arguments over it. It's crazy.
So when you stop at a rest stop, what's your usual buy? You're on a road trip. You're driving out there. What are you grabbing at the Loves?
So that's pretty interesting because we actually do make that drive. Well, out here in California, it's the I-5, from Northern California to Southern California. And there's some pretty classic truck stops along the way there. So, what do I buy? Whatchamacallit.
A nice one. Yeah, I'm bad with the candy, too. I'll get, Sour Patch Kids. I'm trying to lose a little weight for F3, so I've had to, curb the sugar and control the calories because that'll destroy your caloric budget almost immediately. With Trucker Path, they put out a survey. They surveyed their community drivers of what drivers are buying at the rest stops. They're always trying to push for drivers to be more healthy. And it says here, what do you typically buy at the rest stop? The number one choice was I usually eat at the truck stop restaurant, which is going to be some kind of fast food that they have in those. 35% said I usually get freshly prepared food from the truck stop, then go out and eat on the road or in their truck. And then 23%, I usually shop for groceries at the truck stop, then eventually they'll eat on the road. So they're probably doing the healthiest. They're the lowest number. And what are they buying? A lot of them said hot breakfast, 53.9%. 30% like those roller dogs and the hot dogs. They have never appealed to me. 26% got the sandwiches. 25% have Mexican food on the road. And then healthy food was also 25%.
Wow. I'm surprised the hot dog hamburgers rank so high.
You a good roller dog guy?
No, but I got to, I know somebody who is, and he's probably watching right now. So he's, agrees with that.
Tanker Donkey says water, maybe dip if he runs out. He typically packs his own food. Truck stops aren't cheap, right? I imagine it could get pretty expensive having to have an eat out of one of those all the time.
Absolutely. And grocery shopping at one. I couldn't imagine how expensive that would be.
You know, Sam, actually, this guy, some guys, he left a comment. He said, would drivers be interested in knowing about truck stops that receive and held their grocery orders for them? I pitched this once as an amenity. I thought drivers would appreciate and notice. I think that could be pretty interesting.
No, absolutely. Especially now where, you know, that's some of the other, you know, companies I'm looking at now are ones that are helping with driver health and giving some options, you know, the platforms and public.
Yeah, some people are doing great stuff in there. Well, we are out of time. It's time for the weekend. I'm going to send you to go, but what website can they find you at?
Go to DiabloFreight.com. You can fill out just a quick little form there to send me your information, and I'll get back to you. Otherwise, LinkedIn.
Tyson, thank you so much for your time. You can find this show at FW Freight, at FW What the Truck. You can find me at Timothy Dooner. That's D-O-O-N-E-R. I'm most active on Twitter, X, LinkedIn. You can find the show also on YouTube or podcast players anywhere. Take care. Have a great weekend, and don't be a stranger.